drawn and colored frames from the classic Disney animated features, Snow White, Pinocchio, Sleeping Beauty, Fantasia. Lucille Martin, Walt's former secretary, was sitting just outside the office. Somewhat apprehensively, Eisner settled into Walt's chair behind the desk. Then Frank Wells walked in and sat down across from him. Wells, age 52, looked as if he'd been sent from central casting for the role of studio executive, tall, ruggedly handsome, wearing glasses, graying at the temples. Their new partnership was something of a shotgun marriage, hastily forged in the months leading up to the board vote. Eisner didn't know him well, but Wells's willingness to take the number two position, ceding the top spot to Eisner, had made a deep impression. They chatted briefly as Wells scanned their new surroundings, but Wells showed no sign of getting up from his chair. "Are we going to sit here together?" Eisner finally asked. Wells shrugged. "I thought we would." "I can't work that way," Eisner said. So Wells moved to a conference room next door. Like much at Disney, Eisner's new office hadn't changed much since Walt died in 1966. The pace at Disney was so leisurely that by lunchtime the workday was pretty much over, at least for top executives and senior producers. They played cards every day after lunch in a small room off the executive dining room. Afterwards, they often had massages from Bob Hope's masseur, who was kept on staff, followed by visits to the steam room and Walt's custom-made 30-nozzle shower. Employees stopped work early to play softball every Tuesday evening. When a newly hired executive persisted in working evenings and weekends, it was considered so unorthodox that security launched an investigation. Almost no one was fired. At most studios, numerous employees were hired for the run of a production, then let go when shooting wrapped. At Disney, they stayed indefinitely, awaiting new assignments. Instead of using outside producers, Disney kept them in-house. Disney released a new animated feature every 4 years, and had produced just 3 live-action films the year before Eisner's arrival. Typical overhead on a Disney film was twice that of rival studios. Eisner and Wells had already decided that this was going to change, but on their first afternoon at the company, they tried to reassure nervous employees, speaking from a bandstand that had been built for the film Something Wicked This Way Comes. It helped that Roy was with them. Then they toured the lot, meeting every employee they could and shaking hands. Eisner asked one young woman where she worked. "BVI," she replied. "I didn't know Disney owned an underwear company," he said. "No," she laughed. "BVI is Buena Vista International, Disney's movie distribution arm." Much to Eisner's relief, in the many interviews leading up to the board vote, no one had asked him much about Disney, either the company or its products. As he later wrote in a draft of his autobiography, "To be honest, I knew little about Disney. Little about the culture or even the actual films. If Disney had not been under siege and under real risk of being acquired and sold off in pieces, I would not have passed the interview process. If Disney production had not faltered creatively, I would not have passed the interview process. If Roy Disney had not just had blind faith in me for reasons I will never understand, I would not have passed the interview process. And if Sid Bass had not backed this blind faith, I would not have passed the interview."